Today on Seculo, a massive defeat in a Democrat primary.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, so folks, you might see, Jordan, what are you talking about? A massive defeat in a Democrat primary. Why are we worried about Democrat primaries? Well, you know, there are some Democrats in the U.S., especially the House of Representatives, that specifically have taken, you know, that squad, the Hamas caucus, as we've called them, the anti-Semite caucus, maybe, and Jamal Bowman of New York. Remember him for pulling the fire alarm, too? I mean, he did some bizarre things in Congress. Yep. But this is someone who, again, what the squad went hard for in the Democrat primary. He was one of 37 Democrats that voted against sending Israel any aid or funding. He voted against legislation to strengthen the Abraham Accords. So he actually didn't want Israel to have a better relationship with other Muslim countries that wanted to have a better relationship with Israel. He signed on to a resolution calling for the U.S. to formally recognize the Nakba Day, which is a Palestinian term, which is the Catastrophe Day, which is the day that Israel celebrates as its Independence Day in 1948. He boycotted Israel's President Isaac Herzog's address to a joint session of Congress in 2023. And he's been, of course, an outspoken critic of Israel's war in Gaza. But it's not that Israel just started a war in Gaza. Of course, it's the October 7th Hamas terror attacks that led to this.
About as anti-Israel as you can be.
Yeah.
In New York, which obviously we've kind of thought one way or the other in terms of the way you've seen the protest unfold and all of that. But it seems like New Yorkers...
He took out a high-ranking Democrat. He challenged Elliot Engel, who was a very pro-Israel, kind of run-of-the-mill liberal Democrat for New York standards.
Defeated
but,
handily.
But pro-Israel. Defeated. He took him out in primary. But last night, the voters in Bowman's district, and the votes are still coming in, but with 84% of the votes in, it's about a 60-40 loss. So 60% of Democrat voters. And let me tell you, that would be a lot of those voters in the Bronx all the way to into Westchester County, so very different demographics.
Well, if you saw the videos of like AOC dancing and sort of that whole thing that happened, that was at his event. So to clarify, because a lot of people just maybe saw that and didn't understand what they were looking at, that was at the rally. As you can tell, it's not. I mean, it's intended, okay. Trying to rally people up at the last minute, and it failed massively. And it failed massively to a candidate, like you said, probably not going to agree on most issues, being a Democrat, but this is a Democrat primary, but someone who the Jewish community and the pro-Israel community had gotten behind, which actually shows a bit of hope of what's happening in New York and around the country that maybe what we're being fed in terms of the anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel rhetoric is just that, rhetoric from a small group of loud people. And when actually you get to New Yorkers or you get to people around the country, they're going to stand up for the ones who they know are doing the right thing.
Well, listen, I mean, you have to remember that Hakeem Jeffries, who is the minority leader in the House of Representatives, so the highest ranking Democrat, he invited Prime Minister Netanyahu to attend the joint session later on next month and to address Congress. Yeah. So did Chuck Schumer, who said that Netanyahu should step down, but he still signed on to invite the leader of Israel. Sure. Seeing the bigger picture of, I might have issues with Netanyahu, but I still support Israel strongly. So what he tried to say, I don't really love that idea. I think you can keep that as a high-ranking senator. You can kind of keep that amongst, call Netanyahu yourself, call the opposition yourself. You don't need to necessarily meddle in another country's politics. If you truly do support that country and decide that their people will make the right decision as a Democratic, a vote, you know, it's a true democracy in the Middle East. But I think what it does show, though, is this: the radicalism on the left is getting pushed back inside its own party. We're going to talk about it later today with Tulsi Gabbard on the show,
Absolutely.
Too.
You can give us a call with your thoughts, too. Is the Democrat Party finally waking up? Are they too far gone? 1-800-684-3110. I got a text from our friend John Androsic from Five for Fighting after the election came out, the results. He put, some elections are not right versus left. It's right versus wrong. So he was very excited about that. Obviously, someone who is a very loud voice, loud pro-Israel voice. Give us a call, though. Also, we are halfway through Life Week right now, and we'll talk about that more coming up. But right now, if you make a donation of $60 or more, you get the ACLJ Victory for Life lapel pin, which we appreciate here during Life Week. We'll be right back.
play first what Jamal Bowman was acting like to his own constituents. Now, there's no sound when he's pulling the alarm, which we never got a good... He said he was having like an anxiety attack.
I'm not even sure that...
First he denied he did it. And then we had it on video. And then I think he said he was like having a some kind of breakdown. He thought he could use maybe like the Fetterman defense, but that didn't work because he wasn't having a breakdown. And so he did that. And that kind of got him some national attention. But the squad, even after that, stuck with him. Didn't think, hey, maybe this guy's too much of a nut. Maybe we should go and find our own candidate in this primary.
Because constituents clearly did.
Well, see, the constituents who are, again, this is going to be a Democrat district. And the Democrat who won, I think he was, what is he, 70 years old. He is a local and state political person. He was on the Rye City Council.
Yeah.
Probably very supportive of Israel and was got a lot of support from pro-Israel nonpartisan groups who go around the country to support candidates not based on Republican and Democrat, but really only on that issue. And of course, that'd be groups like AIPAC. And that's not AIPAC, it's affiliated, you know, they're entities that are affiliated that are allowed to be involved in politics. But when you get beat 60-40 as an incumbent, it wasn't like he barely lost.
Yeah, that's beyond a just someone made a donation and hopefully it did some damage. No,
but maybe this is why. Let's start with him screaming on stage. We had to bleep some of this out.
Yeah.
And what I love about these rallies are these are rallies that they say, you know, bring everybody to. And remember, the average voter in a lot of these districts is 60 plus years old. Remember, that's still the case. So this kind of language
does not go over.
Doesn't go over well. And this kind of attitude.
Saying the language may in New York because they don't care. Well, but the attitude,
the whole attitude,
the chaos of it.
The nastiness of this guy jumping around. I mean, we wish for all of you who are listening, you could see this with us, but I think you can imagine this is not a guy standing at a podium doing this. He is all over the stage like he is about to punch someone in the face. Yeah, Take a listen and watch.
I am the hip-hop congressman. People ask me why I got a foul mouth. What am I supposed to do? You coming after me. You coming after my family. You coming after my children. I'm not supposed to fight back. I'm not supposed to fight back. We're going to show them who the f*** we are. Let me get the guns out again one more time.
So this was a full-blown breakdown.
Full breakdown.
This is a full-blown breakdown.
That's like conspiratorial. Uh-huh. They're coming after my family. They have to be. Now, listen, you get in politics, you're going to have horrible things written about you. It doesn't matter what you are.
It will break it.
But if you are going to get involved in progressive and you're going to take extreme views, you better be ready to take the fire. Now, when he said take the guns out, thankfully, if you were just listening to that, he was talking about his own arms.
Yes.
And he's a hip-hop congressman. Well,
hip-hop congressman he will be
the hip-hop congressman for a few more months, and then he will be unemployed.
Yeah. He'll go work for MSNBC. It's fine. As the hip, they'll put that as his chyron, the hip-hop congressman.
But
he had something to say.
The hip-hop Jew-hating congressman.
And that's what we got here. We had sort of the next bite,
yeah,
right?
So this is after he found... So that was before he lost.
This was his
concession speech,
correct? Just make sure that's right. All right. So this was his concession speech last night. Who's he going to blame? Of course, there's only one category of people you got to blame.
We should be outraged when a super PAC of dark money can spend $20 million to brainwash people into believing something that isn't true. Even though AIPAC and their affiliates, don't boo. I know we want to boo them. Don't boo. Boo!
Don't boo. Boo. All right, that's because he's worried. He's not going to scare
you
anymore.
And by the way, if it was such dark money, how does he know exactly how much money they spent?
Right.
It wasn't that much. I don't think AIPAC or anybody who was pro-Israel was, it was hard to figure out that they were not going to be supportive of this guy. They're going to target every one of these Democrats that they can, especially if they're in a district
and if
where they
ever
believe.
A year, when the Jewish organizations are going to get involved,
this is it.
This is it.
When your back's up against the wall,
right.
When you know the world, when you see these protests that we've seen. But what I think it is a side, Logan, that when normal people, and again, that I'm talking most of the voters there will be Democrat,
it's
a Democrat
New York
district. But I'm saying normal people who are not ideologues, they don't hate other countries. If they have no reason to, if they haven't attacked the United States, they don't hate our allies like Israel, they're not anti-Semitic. They see these representatives and they came out in droves in a primary to unseat an incumbent. These are not easy things to do politically. But when you lose 60-40, he ignored his community, and he was only representing the squad and the anti-Israel wing of the Democrat Party, which is felt like it has been growing. But if we can show that they can be defeated and almost silenced in a way, because when you take away him as a congressman, he loses his whole platform. And that's one less squad member. So you see, I mean, I do think they're not all vulnerable in every district. But in the districts that they are, you will see more and more Democrats. You know, that's why Joe Biden's going to have to walk a very fine line. I mean, and between am I arming Israel but not arming Israel? And how
they
am I
hung
do
their
it?
Hat on this. I mean, here's AOC at the rally. I mean, what are they hanging their hat on specifically? Anti-Israel. I mean, that is the that is the key topic they thought was going to take them over the
top.
Not
about the community. Not about like getting better funding to the community in the Bronx or to building schools or education or better jobs because
they
don't care about that.
Let's take a listen. This is AOC. This video clip is all this. Where I was looking for that bite. Here we go. Okay. Well, all right. No, guys. Let's get this cut where we can actually just get to her talking. I don't care about the dancing portion of this.
Yeah, well,
So let's cut that back down a little bit here. Because I'll read it to you. She says, let's go vote. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Goes on this whole thing. He goes, are you ready to fight for a ceasefire in Gaza and something AIPAC and their influence in our politics? So specifically saying, not just are you ready to, she's ready to say, are you taking the state back? Who are we taking the state back from? The Zionists.
Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that it doesn't work everywhere. Thank God. It's a good sign that we can defeat and the Democrats can do this internally too. To kind of squelch the voice as much as possible. But we have seen Joe Biden walking a fine line because while it might not be 60% of the vote yet, it is still getting 40%. And when you're trying to run for president in a very tight election and you see that Jamal Bowman still got 40% in that district and you're Joe Biden and his political team, you're trying to see how do we keep that other 40% still voting for us? And you do that by saying, well, we're going to send you weapons, but we're going to slow it down based off what your actions are. So if you go into a certain, if we're going to tell you how you can use the weapons, which is not really how, I feel like we haven't done that with Ukraine so much. I mean, I feel like we dumped over all these weapons and that's still going on. And we don't even have like an end game there. In Israel, they said, provide us what we need and this will be over quicker.
Absolutely. Hey, I wanted to let people know, too, phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you on this. I know, like Jordan said, this is a strange thing to be promoting, that there's what would be considered, I guess, a victory for Israel and the fact that you are overturning, you're getting rid of people who are this anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party. You're actually seeing that happen. Are we going to support this candidate? Are we going to like most of what he has to say? Probably not. But you do have to take some kind of like a lowercase v victory in the fact that at least this talking point seems to be getting to people. What do you think about that? Give me a call, 1-800-684-3110. Rick Grinnell's going to be joining us in the next segment, and then Tulsi Gabbard later on, so you're going to make sure you stay tuned. We are right now in the middle of Life Week. Of course, that is our celebration of the two-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and it is time for a celebration. It really is. Though the fight continues and is stronger than ever, we are having to get involved in every state, by each state level, get involved, whether that is defending pro-life counselors, sidewalk counselors who are saving people's lives, babies' lives outside of abortion clinics. We are filing a critical amicus brief at the Supreme Court to allow states to defend or to really get involved in this fight. So we want you to be there as well. And as a little token of our appreciation, we know that it's just a pin, a lapel pin. It's really pretty. It's really well done. Supreme Court's a great thing to think about. As Jordan said, it's a great thing just to even hold and say, yes, we had a victory for life that we never thought we would have in our lifetime. We always fought for it, but I'll be honest, I never thought we would have seen the day. I mean, I prayed for it, but it just didn't feel like that's where society was going, and it happened. But now the fight continues. So you can hold this, pray for it. Think about us. Think about the ACLJ. With your prayers, and of course, wear it if you have a, I'm wearing it right now on my collar. You can wear a collar, a lapel pin, whatever it is. It's a great little reminder, and it's for any donation over $60. You'll get this in the mail. So we appreciate that. During Life Week, again, a celebration of life, and that's what we're doing here right now. Again, phone lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. Jordan, what are you talking about with Rick Grinnell coming up?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the border secure, and, of course, this rise of ISIS back again using smuggling at the border. What the administration is saying about it, 400 individuals linked to ISIS smuggling, and what we believe the truth is about those 400 individuals. So we'll talk to the former acting director of National Intelligence about this latest report that ISIS has smuggled over 400 people across our southern border, which we know is open and porous, and a lot of this is directly tied to it. It is all tied to the Biden administration policies. We'll be right back, but get that pin. Make that donation for $60 at ACLJ.org today. Back to Secular. We are taking your calls too, and you might have questions about this one, 1-800-684-3110. Of course, the big debate tomorrow. We'll be talking about that, of course, tomorrow and then on the following day as we kind of get into that debate analysis and how that went. When we walk through all the rules of the debate tomorrow before you watch that, I think most of you will be. And then there's another debate scheduled for September. We'll see if that happens. Then we're getting close to, you know, the actual the RNC, where we'll have an announcement probably fairly soon of the VP candidate. But I want to bring in Rick Grinnell right away from our team here at the ACLJ. Rick, this new report from NBC, and it says the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, identifies over 400, not a small number, 400 migrants brought to the U.S. by an ISIS-affiliated human smuggling network. And at the same time, they are telling us that they are not concerned about these individuals. Don't worry. This is just money-making for ISIS. This is not ISIS using 400 people to try and place. All it would take, Rick, is a handful of ISIS terrorists in that group of 400 to set up an entire terror network in the United States. You have to have all 400. But they kind of, the administration has completely dismissed it as, don't worry, they were just using this to make money.
Yeah, we know that this administration likes to downplay threats. As we watch threats become very real and our, you know, safety at risk, we've seen this time and time again. Remember what their rhetoric was about Afghanistan withdrawal. Remember what their rhetoric was about Nord Stream 2, Putin's pipeline. They've clearly had a pattern of underestimating our threats. The fact that there are 400 ISIS members that have entered the United States and we don't exactly know where they are, they've lost many of them. They cannot assure us that these ISIS members are here to get jobs at Starbucks. What we know is that these ISIS members are going to be loyal to the people that brought them. I will never be convinced that if ISIS brings you to the United States, that you're not going to be loyal to ISIS. The idea that they're ISIS related or that they were ISIS, brought here by ISIS members, but they're not quite a member themselves, I'll never buy that. Of course they are ISIS affiliated. And that is enough to make us very concerned. We should know exactly where every one of these individuals are. Jordan, you and I both know it just takes one person to do some chaos. And this open border has shown us that individuals are going to come in and murder people, rape Americans. And now we know 400 ISIS-affiliated people are inside our country.
Yes, 400. They've arrested 150, so you've got, you know, remaining 250 out there. They know about where 50. They think they know about 50 of them. They have no idea where they are at all. So they've totally fallen into the system. But it is this downplay. And Rick, I kind of want to go back to this too, because people haven't heard a lot about ISIS. We heard about ISIS-K in the pullout of Afghanistan and that horrible terror attack that killed the 13. U.S. troops that you were just talking about. But we haven't heard a lot more about Islamic terrorism, especially organized Islamic terrorism. You know, we've seen the protest the pro-Palestinian protests in the streets have turned somewhat, you know, street violent. But we haven't heard as much about, you know, kind of planned Islamic terror inside the United States. I know France is concerned about that right now because of the Olympics and issues there and some elections that they're having there. But we haven't talked about as much in the United States, and we kind of forget that these threats are still out there and that these groups reorganize. So even though main ISIS was destroyed by the Trump administration, there is a new ISIS reorganizing, and they are sophisticated enough to be running smuggling networks on our southern border, which means, Rick, to me, they're sophisticated enough to be carrying out attacks, at least planning the attacks.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons why we have not heard about ISIS attacks here is because the United States has done a really good job of controlling the border up till now. It hasn't been perfect, but certainly President Trump has managed to keep the border as closed as possible. There are gotaways that happened, but not at the level that we're seeing now under the Biden administration. There has been a concerted effort to really push in a whole bunch of people on the terrorist watch list and others into our country during the Biden administration. So we usually have a more closed border and a system that individuals are vetted at our embassies before they're allowed to come into the United States. Right now, we don't have that good system in place because of Joe Biden. The border is wide open. ISIS and other terrorists are coming into our country. We've lost control as to where they are. They clearly are burying into our country and figuring out when to strike. There is no question about that.
I mean, I want to play this from Mayorkas because it just seems so, again, dangerous to make a statement like this when you are Secretary of Homeland Security. You know, you're acknowledging that ISIS was involved in the smuggling of these individuals, but you are, to the American people and to Congress, playing down that there's any threat while you're under oath, and that's your real, actual opinion. You're gonna kind of put your career on. Take a listen.
Well, if I may correct you in a number of regards. Number one, with respect to the people from Central Asia, we have no evidence that they are individuals plotting to harm the United States. That is inaccurate.
Okay. I mean, when you know that ISIS, Rick, is involved in smuggling 400 people, I just want you to repeat it clearly for our audience. It takes one to carry out a really massive, pretty massive attack, a lot of loss of life. But if you get 10 or 12 or 20 sprinkled in that 400, you're creating an entire terror network inside the United States.
Look, when he says that he has no evidence, that's truly, it could be a statement saying we don't exactly know where to find them and where to get them. But it's not accurate to say we have no evidence. We certainly have evidence that they're in our country. We know that they are here. That's enough evidence. What he's saying is we haven't caught them with the bomb yet. We haven't found them buying the pieces. But that's not very assuring to me. What we should be able to do is immediately find these individuals and all the others that are getting into our country unvetted. We have millions, though, Jordan. You and I both know there are millions of people that have been unvetted. That's why we're seeing killing. That's why we're seeing more individuals coming into our country that are raping young girls. This is an outrage because they've been unvetted. Millions of people entering our country around the system, illegally coming in and breaking the laws, breaking the rules to wait in line. They are unvetted. We cannot state this enough.
Rick, as always, we appreciate you being part of the team, Rick Riddell. And folks, you may have seen on Rick's lapel, you got on mine. Logan, you got a shirt collar.
Yeah, I got right there. Collar, yeah.
And we've asked people for, this week as we celebrate a life. We are, and we call it Life Week, to remind you that 2 years since overturning Roe versus Wade. Make that $60 donation at ACLJ.org. You can get the pin, but the pin's also a reminder to pray for the battle for life that's ongoing right now by our attorneys in the states and our government affairs team in the states. So you go to ACLJ.org right now with your $60 donation. You will get this same pin that we're all wearing as that reminder that we fight for human life.
Yeah.
keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your calls, 2-1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. A lot of issues we've talked about today. Of course, a loss by a prominent squad member inside the Democrat Party. So Democrats coming out in droves in New York in the district where Jamal Bowman was the congressman for two terms, but he will no longer be the congressman representing that district. And it, right now, as the votes are being totaled, he lost about 60-40. That is a blowout loss for the squad,
awesome,
who has raised a lot of money. He was an incumbent. He did some things that were, you know, nuttier than just what he says is an anti-Semite, anti-Israel. He also pulled the fire alarm. Yeah,
started embarrassing your district, probably.
Yes. Yeah. And I think he talks about the language he uses, because he uses foul language almost every time he speaks. So yeah, you wouldn't want children around him, and you get in trouble on the floor of the House if you keep using that kind of language. So, you know, he's beeped out like everything he talks about. And I think people just over time, maybe he hit on a moment where there was like a little bit more of a interest in the squad, and once they started kind of hurting the economics of their community, like shutting down the Amazon plant that could have been there, brought all those jobs that AOC did, you realize if you're not in the most radical of radical districts, you're not Ilhan Omar or AOC, the people figure you out pretty quick and you can be defeated.
Well, it's interesting because last go around, there was this sort of small conversation, especially with Trump having his rally, that New York could very likely, I mean, very unlikely, I think, but could be on the table. So I'm curious for you, as probably a conservative listener, when you hear this result out of New York, and you know that President Biden right now is not running on a very pro-Israel platform. He's definitely trying to have his cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
But if he decided then, I think this is probably a wake-up call for them, if he decided to go full bore like the squad, that could mean a resounding defeat in some of these key states, including New York.
Here's the problem if you're Joe Biden. You don't get a great victory by only getting 60% of the Democrat vote.
Yeah.
You've got to get 100%, right? You've got to get people out or you're going to lose in states you shouldn't.
Right.
So how do you get the 40% of those Democrats that Jamal Bowman still got who are taking this very hardline anti-Israel position?
So what do you think this means for the general election, and what does it mean for you? I want you to give me a call and give me your thoughts, as we are just a day away from the first presidential debate. Will be tomorrow night. Obviously, all eyes will be on your news platforms, on CNN and the other networks that are carrying it. I saw Fox News just put up, we're going to have post-game coverage. That's what they said. Post-game coverage, like it's the NFL. I mean, that's what's said on the bottom of the screen. What are your thoughts heading into that? Is this something that President Trump can jump upon? 1-800-684-3110. We're going to take the calls in the last segment of the broadcast, because next segment we have Tulsi Gabbard joining us. Then following that, we take one call really quick. Okay. Let's go ahead and go to Rob really quickly in Ohio. Rob, you're on a hold. You're on the air.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I just kind of wanted to say that honestly, I'm kind of glad that the Democrats are weeding out the radical left. As somebody who was a Republican, then a Democrat, and now an independent, I'm truly a middle of the road type of guy. So I want to see more of these moderate candidates across the board for Congress, president, state house, everything. And I'm hoping we're getting back into that groove.
Yeah. I don't know if we're there nationally yet. I mean, I don't think again that either party is very moderate right now. If you look at that'd be the wrong way to describe them. But I do think on certain issues, the American people are still pretty united. And when it comes to who our allies are in the world and anti-Semitism, that people don't for the most part, support racism in any form. And people also don't like attacking one of our allies. And they all saw what happened on October 7th. They saw the brutality. So they understand the response. Not that war is perfect. It's horrible. But Israel was put in a place where it had to respond. And there's still 150 hostages there. So again, what it shows is that if you are willing to put the resources behind it and kind of take your politics out for a moment, you can knock out some of these dangerous extremists from Congress so they don't have a voice as a U.S. representative when they travel the world, too.
That's right. And phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. Get in line right now. It's perfect time. 1-800-684-3110. Tulsi Gabbard coming up next.
Welcome back to Secio. Folks, we're going to take your calls in the next segment of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I wanted to bring in our team member, Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman as well and presidential candidate. She left the Democrat Party. I want to ask you, Tulsi, though, right away, because we've been talking about the primary loss. We don't usually get involved in a lot of Democrat primary discussions here on Secio on the House level, but the fact that one of these squad members has lost in a big way, 60-40, by 20 points in New York, Jamal Bowman, and of course they're blaming pro-Israel groups for that, so still with the anti-Semitic language, and you still had Bernie Sanders there, you had AOC there, but they were not able to keep Jamal Bowman in a Congress, and voters there very clearly said, we don't want you representing us. I mean, I think that is a positive sign that there is a movement inside the Democrat Party, or at least inside voters in New York in that district that probably leans very Democrat, that they don't want these kind of extremists who are really towing the line on racism and anti-Semitism and encouraging violence almost against Jews, even inside America, to be representing them in Congress.
And there has been increasing violence against Jewish people who are going to worship at synagogue or predominantly Jewish neighborhoods, people literally going out and chasing them down and hunting them down. It's a terrifying time to hear from our Jewish friends really sincerely questioning whether or not it is safe to live and raise their kids and their families in the United States of America. I was looking at this race and was very curious about how it was going to turn out. A few points that I think are interesting is, number one, Mr. Bowman represented a district in New York City that had a quite significant Jewish community, first of all. And so, of course, if you're looking at just pure representation, how alarmed that they would be by his rhetoric and how angry his rhetoric was. Number two, it's what you're pointing out. I think it's a good thing to see that more people, I mean, that was not a small margin of victory. More people are seeing the insanity of these people who call themselves progressives, but who do not represent any kind of progress towards the values that we cherish and hold dear in our country. It's going to be, I think it's another indicator of how unprecedented this whole election year is. The Mr. Bowman and AOC, they're all decrying AIPAC and AIPAC's big money. And apparently this was the most expensive House race in history. But when you look at the kinds of ads that AIPAC was running, they weren't talking about Israel. They weren't talking about Gaza. They weren't talking even about foreign policy for the most part. They were talking about everyday issues that impact all Americans, all of the people in New York City, the down home issues, the economic issues, issues related to education and increasing crime, security threats, border security. So when you look at the so-called referendum that took place here, of course they're aiming, the so-called progressives are aiming their fire at AIPAC. But when we look at the issues that really seemed to drive voters' decisions, given that's where AIPAC spent this millions of dollars that they raised, these are issues that I hope all Americans will look at as they make this decision in November, because they're issues that transcend partisan politics.
Tulsi, another thing too, when you get a 60-40, this is going to be interesting for the Biden team, because it's one thing in a primary, even in a general election when you're running in a district, but if you're Biden's team and you know that there's kind of this support for you maybe with older Democrats, but you're kind of lost support with younger Democrats, and they've been trying to toe this line of being kind of not anti-Israel, but at the same time taking out some positions like not getting the armaments there on time to Israel, or trying to direct Israel, decide who the politicians should be and how they should vote in their own democracies, and they've been very open about that. And so it's been obvious that it's a political move that they need to make sure that 40% of voters that still was supporting Jamal Bowman is going to somehow get out and vote for Joe Biden, which is kind of hard to imagine most of them that they would. But if they don't, then they start losing in states that they weren't even considered to be states that would be in play in this election. So, I mean, there's definitely some shift going on. And I know in primaries, again, people can kind of come out, knock out the radical candidate, and it doesn't mean that the whole party's been shifted. certainly not the case. But Joe Biden has to get as many Democrats and independents as possible to vote for him, and that means trying to play this line of not being anti the anti-Israel, anti-Semite kind of anti-Semitic language we've heard, but also having to be somewhat pro-Israel. And I think he's put himself in a mess.
He really has. And when you look at this issue alone, you know what? I mean, this is like the age-old wisdom that we learn even as kids growing up, is if you're trying to please everyone by not taking a stand, you are pleasing no one. And I think this is the position that President Biden has found himself in, is he is trying to play politics rather than actually doing what is right, speaking the truth, taking a principled position. Because I can tell you, I know that there are a lot of people who, even when I was in Congress, they might have disagreed with the position that I took, but they respected the fact that I was standing up for what I believed was right for our country. It was right for the interests of the American people, and still supported me in spite of that. You look at New York, you talk about different states that normally, you know, would never be in quote unquote play for a Republican candidate for president. But you look at New York, the last poll that I saw from, I think, a week or two ago for New York State was President Trump was only 7% behind Joe Biden in the state of New York. And so, yeah, your point is very, very relevant to, you know, where are these people going to go? And I think President Trump is right and correct in going to places where Republican candidates or the Republican Party don't really ever pay attention to. The American people want a leader who will pay attention to them, their needs and their concerns, and serve all Americans. And that's where, again, I have hope in this election.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we're going to see Thursday how the issues, but a lot of that's being controlled by, you know, being controlled by CNN and the candidates themselves. I mean, a lot of that is kind of how you come across to the American people. Well, I'm sure we'll break that down and talk about it. But I agree with you, Tulsa. I mean, we are, you know, we can get focused on all these other issues, and they're important. I mean, issues like Israel, they're important to us, the ACLJ. But as you've traveled the country, talked to people from all over in different states, and we know the problems that are hitting Americans right now. We know it's the border. We know it's the jobs. We know it's inflation. We know it's the economy. And then we have solutions to those issues that we could probably get passed through Congress, but that the Biden administration has just been unwilling to even, you know, take meetings on, take questions on, and it feels like they're just going to try and say, this is, you know, Donald Trump's the one, he got convicted of this, he got convicted of that, you can't trust him, he's, you know, he's this and that, and they don't want to talk policy, they don't want to talk issues or the truth about what's happened while they've been in office, which is turned America kind of upside down, honestly.
It's true. I saw a note early this morning that there are some Biden advisors who are trying to help him with his debate prep, literally telling him, don't focus on your record and contrasting it with Trump's record, just attack him. Continue to levy these attacks and these smears and hope that as many times as you can repeat it, maybe one or two or a few of them will land. What they're continuing to do on the Democrat side is making the mistake they've been making for a very long time, certainly since Donald Trump was elected in 2016, is they really believe that we are stupid. The American people are stupid. They believe that anyone who voted for Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy, or, you know, they are, what was the Hillary Clinton term? Basically, they are people, yeah, the deplorables. Thank you. The basket of deplorables. And this is what they believe. And the American people are recognizing that. Why should I think that I can trust you with my vote and the well-being of my family and our community and our country when you really think that we are so stupid and so easily manipulated by you and your lies? And we are seeing how brazen that is becoming more and more.
We appreciate all of what you do for the country, and of course, as our team here on Seculo, and of course, encourage everybody, if you don't have it yet, to get Tulsi's book. It's been a New York Times bestseller, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. You can get it where books are sold, and of course, Amazon.com as well. Tulsi, as always, thanks for being with us. We'll definitely check in with you again this week after the debate.
Big debate tomorrow, and hey, right now, we are going to take some calls about that and the other topics. 1-800-684-3110. We got three lines open right now.
1-800-684-3110. Have your voice heard. We have heard from Tulsi Gabbard. We have heard from Rick Grenell. We have heard from, obviously, our incredible team here. But now we get to hear from the most important voice in the room, and that's you. And you know what I saw? I did see some people. I haven't done this in a few days. People said, you know what happened in New York? The clowns turned up. Even our Democrat liberal clowns showed up. So you know what that means. Have some fun, as always. Give us a call, though. 1-800-684. They know what to do. Clown it up. Send in the clowns. As we've said, also, this is the Middle of Life Week. We are doing a special offer. We've never done this before. If you support the ACLJ, give a gift of over $60, you'll get this nice commemorative pin. Obviously, it supports our work to continue to fight for life during this very important time. Again, go to aclj.org/lifeweek. Make that donation now, and we'll be back with your voice and your calls coming up right after this.
To Secchio. We're going to take your calls, as Logan said, throughout this final segment of the broadcast. Of course, the debate tomorrow, you can watch it wherever you would watch your debates.
Yeah, it's even interesting. Though it is it's being on CNN, but it's simulcast on most of the major platforms.
That must have been part of the negotiation.
Part of the deal. They get to host it.
They're the right. They get to set up the... Well, even the staging was approved by the campaigns. You're not going to see that... They're going to be seated, like VP style.
Yeah, it's going to be very different.
I don't know how close they'll be. That can always get weird.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of the conversation, the coin flip and all that. I'm looking at all the clowns, by the way. Appreciate that. The comments are blowing up with that. It's always fun. Let's go ahead and take some phone calls. We've got a lot of people on hold. One is about the debate. Let's do it. I think it's kind of funny. Susan's calling from Maryland on line three. Susan, you're on the air. Watch it on YouTube.
Hello, guys. Hey, Susan calling from Maryland. I'm a senior in Maryland. I am so excited, along with my friends. We're going to turn Maryland red. I haven't been this excited since John F. Kennedy was campaigning for the presidency back in 1960. I was only 9 years old. But now that I'm a senior and Donald Trump has come, that's what our hippie generation was all about. We were all about fixing this country. And that song, Send in the Clowns, I think, could be wrong, was the Judy Collins song. Yep. And the Who did a number back then called We're Not Going to Take It.
Yeah. And, it was Twisted Sister, but yes, close enough. I'll give that to you. But Susan, what you said in the comments, where I like, so she felt like a kid on Christmas morning because the debate is tomorrow. I think a lot of people feel that way because we had what was months of no debates, and the primary debates being practically worthless. So all of us that actually enjoy watching these debates have had like the most disappointing political fun part of the political season, and now tomorrow we finally get what we've been waiting for, and maybe in the sort of biggest scale we can do it. I mean, I would have packed out an arena and done this debate, but you know, it is what it is. It's going to be one in Atlanta, and it's going to be pretty interesting.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, there's at least a 50% chance that one of these people will be president. I say that because who knows what's going to happen. Joe Biden, the Democrats.
Maybe like a 44%. There could still be a swerve that we're not expecting.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, I mean, Democrats are still like, they are so upset with being stuck with Joe Biden. Until they actually do it, I nominate them 100%, which I think they are doing even before the convention. But until like it's done, I feel like they could be using these kind of events to almost throw them out. Like, if he has one of those moments where he just loses, not consciousness, because he stays awake, but you know, he just starts staring. And, you know, I don't think Donald Trump's going to help him off. You know, he's not going to help him. And the moderators can try to get him back on track. But, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, it's just not been a lot of good. This is going to be the most intense thing Joe Biden has been through in 4 years.
Yep, absolutely.
Realize that.
Yeah, I mean,
going up against Donald Trump is intense for anybody. I don't care how old you are. But if you were having trouble with just getting through prepared remarks with a world leader and walking by reporters without responding to them as they shout out questions, which is a normal thing of for politicians, sitting next to Donald Trump, taking ripping you apart, whether or not he's acting like the right way or not. Remember, the first time around, Donald Trump was heavily criticized for the way he handled Joe Biden.
They were rough. I think you can at least acknowledge that they were rough. Let's continue on. Let's go to Bill, who's calling in Wyoming. I do have to say, some people have commented on my classic rock knowledge. If she said won't get fooled again, which I don't think is what she said, I think she said we're not going to take it. I heard we're not going to take it. That is a Twisted Sister song. People are saying won't get fooled again. That's a Who song. Maybe there were just some maybe everyone heard it a little differently. But I'll correct myself when wrong. You can correct me. It's fine. Bill, Wyoming, you're up.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. That's Twisted Sisters. We're not going to take it anymore. I'm going to try and keep in mind that I'm on air and just say I've really discussed it with Mayorkas, because as far as I'm concerned, he's sponsoring ISIS while he's going to a safe home and leaving America open for ISIS to come in.
Yeah, listen, 400, I mean, the report, this is not some report from a conspiracy group. There's an NBC News report. They got that DHS knows 400 people were smuggled into the country through the southern border recently by an ISIS-linked smuggling network, which we know ISIS also works with drug cartels. And what they're trying to tell us is that, well, most of these people were just, this is a moneymaker for ISIS, the new ISIS, which is popping up in Central Asia, which is responsible for the death of 13 U.S. troops when we left Afghanistan. And that was disastrous, to say the least. They call themselves ISIS-K, and they are very active in Central Asia. They've made 150 arrests. So they know that out of this 400, they aren't all just random people who were used an ISIS-linked smuggling network to get to the country. They are bad actors on watch list. There are 50 more they know are bad actors, but they have not yet arrested.
Yeah, I do want to clarify.
It doesn't take more than a handful to create a terror network.
Yeah, and they're saying, it's just people who are paying off ISIS, essentially, to get over the border. Well, that's not a great place to start. Let's not start there. There are a couple calls coming up. I did want to clarify. We actually had some news come out while we're on the show. There have been some updates to the debate. They will be standing. They are not going to be sitting. Both candidates will stick to a simple stand-up. This is from the USA Today, just put out the new rules.
They've done a new...
A pen, paper, and water allowed on stage. Pre-written notes will not be permitted, nor will sitting be allowed, adding an element now of spontaneity, it says, and focusing the debate on genuine responses.
We're going to stand up.
No scripted statements.
They're going to sit up.
Maybe they can move around, kind of like one of those town halls.
That had to be the Biden team not wanting him to have to stand up for an
hour and
a half. Of course,
right? Of course. I mean, so I don't want to stand up for an hour and a half.
Can you stand up for an hour and a half now?
Yeah, probably. No sitting will be provided. Well, maybe during breaks.
He's got a platform.
Yeah. Can we give him like a bicycle seat, something?
Bicycle seat. That's very.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
if you're gonna do that, you want
like
a cruiser
tall stool?
Seat, maybe.
All right. Yeah, that's true. Let's go to.
You don't want like the Tour de France seat.
We got two. Yeah, we'll put him on a Peloton. See what happens. Joe's calling from New York on line four. I can't do it. Joe, you're on the air. Quickly.
Hello. How are you guys? My question is, why is there always Democrats doing the questioning in the debate?
I don't know, Joe. I would like to know why the Trump campaign made this call to go with NBC. I mean, to go with CNN and ABC, right? That's the two. I would always like. I kind of like want to wring their necks. I'll tell you the honest truth. They have 50% of the say in this, and we can't even get a decent moderator in.
It felt like
sometimes we get one person to ask one question. Who's a conservative? Yeah. But enough of that.
Hugh Hewitt's just sitting on the side.
Either we don't go to these debates anymore, and I'm fine with that, not having any debates, because when it's really three against one, it's Joe Biden, it's what's his name?
Dana Bash and Jake Tapper.
Yeah, those three against one. Three Democrats. I mean, and by the way, they've all worked for Democrats in their past history.
The Trump campaign, I think, just said, we're going to say yes to everything, so they have no choice, so they can't back out. Let's quickly take this call from Mike. Mike's got a good comment to wrap it up. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, guys, you just had Tulsi on there, and, listen to what she has to say. Go back to her record. She tore up Kamala in the presidential debate in 2020. So
absolutely.
I think she would be a fantastic choice for vice president. She used to be a Democrat, but let's look again. Donald Trump also used to have been a Democrat.
Yes, I think he changed the whole kind of way of politics. And I mean, she wrote the book about why you have to leave the Democrat Party. She's working with us here, on the Secular broadcast with ACLJ on these issues. And she's been very open and honest about, the issues. And I think she's kind of tracked where a lot of our listeners, a lot of our supporters are. We're going to know who the VP is soon, but remember, there's a lot more than just VP. You have to put together an entire cabinet and team of advisors, and I would love to see, ultimately, if you see a Donald Trump victory, I would love to see Tulsi Gabbard in one of those high-level positions, as well as another other members of our team.
That's right. Support the work of the ACLJ Life Week right now, aclj.org.